Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
There is a religious war going on in this country. It is a cultural war as critical to the kind of nation we shall be as the Cold War itself, for this war is for the soul of America.
The popularity of something does not determine its truthfulness. And the popularity of something does not take away the danger of that false teaching.
When God put Adam and Eve into this world, he did it in a certain way that is determinative forever for the way in which men and women relate to one another.
I jokingly called this the Issues Etc. Revolution, the near complete sweeping out of the old guard that emphasized church growth practices down the line.
Is it here to stay, or is it, I guess, for lack of a better word, a passing fad? The LGBT movement and the sexual revolution, there's a recent piece, I think, in The Federalist by Rachel Liu, and it intrigued me. It caught my imagination. I'm not sure whether I completely understood it or completely agreed with it, but it posited the idea, and I think this is absolutely true, that the LGBT movement has now reached new levels of absurdity and kind of anti-reality apologetic. It is now a full-blown war on the real, on reality. It's both incoherent and in many ways self-contradictory. But can't you say that about the sexual revolution in general from almost its very beginning? But Liu argued that for that reason, the incoherence and the self-contradiction, the sexual revolution was going to fizzle out on its own. It would collapse under its own weight. Is that true? We're going to be answering that question, and we're going to talk about feminism and delayed childbearing. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse will be our guest after that. Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will join us here in the second hour of the program on this Monday afternoon. We'll talk about the devil's attacks on God's order. You can join us for the next hour of the program. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc. And our beloved on-demand listeners, whenever, wherever you listen, use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about the LGBT movement and the sexual revolution and a little later, feminism and delayed childbearing, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse. She's a regular guest, founder and president of the Ruth Institute. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of several books, including her latest, The Sexual Revolution and Its Victims. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me on.
You have recently written in response to Rachel Liu, who wrote a piece last week sometime, basically arguing that the LGBT movement was incoherent and self-contradictory and was bound to self-destruct. How do you respond?
Well, I agree with the first things that you said and that she said. It is incoherent. Intellectually, the whole sexual revolution is incoherent, including this latest phase, meaning the gay activism part of it. But I differ from her in the conclusion that I draw from it. I think there is absolutely no guarantee whatsoever that the sexual revolution or the gay rights movement or gay marriage or any of those things, there's no guarantee at all that it's going to automatically implode just because it's incoherent. And so then that raises a further question of, well, if it's not about having a logically coherent argument, well, what are these movements really about? In the end. And I say that these movements have been very effective at helping certain people accumulate a lot of power. And when you see that that's the point, you know, it's not about helping gay people or helping women or any of the other things it's claimed. It's really about certain people accumulating power. Well, then you can see that can go on for a very long time indeed.
You say that the LGBT movement is not a bug in the sexual revolution, like a computer virus or something. It's a feature. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's not so much the LGBT movement that I'm speaking of when I say it's not a bug, it's a feature. It's the incoherence itself, Todd. The fact that it's incoherent, the fact that it's impossible. Pretty much every phase of the sexual revolution has had logical incoherencies and impossibilities, but that's precisely what makes it valuable to people who are trying to accumulate power. You convince people that we have a high moral duty to do something that's impossible, and please just keep giving me more power so I can get this thing done. It's going to be so great, it's so important, it's so valuable, you know, and by the way, you're a bad person if you don't agree with me, and by the way, I just need a little bit more power and it'll all be good. You know, when you see that that's what the point is, then having an impossible objective, an incoherent objective, is actually a good thing, see, because it helps them accumulate, as long as you can keep the illusion going that it's a duty to do this thing, which is impossible, you don't want to come to the end of that process. That's what I meant by that, Todd.
Are you talking, in essence, about totalitarianism?
Absolutely, absolutely. The sexual revolution is a totalitarian movement, and it has been from the beginning, and precisely because it has features built into it that are contradictory to human nature and cannot be fully implemented, and yet we think we're supposed to fully implement these things, see? So you can't create a world in which sex doesn't make babies. You can give everybody contraception and you can reduce the probability that any particular sexual act will produce a baby. But you can't make a world where sex doesn't make babies. You can't build the whole social order around that. But that's what our rulers are trying to do. But in exactly the same way, you can't have a prosperous society without having property rights. And yet, you know, that's what the Soviet Union tried to do, that's what North Korea tried to do, that's what Venezuela is trying to do. It can't work. But from the point of view of the dictator, that's okay. That's okay that it can't work, because it was never really about prosperity. It was really about accumulating power. And so I think that the sexual revolution is more like that than it is like a passing fad or something like that, some kind of matter of taste, or something that everybody will wake up one day and realize it was ridiculous. I don't think it's like that. I think it's more like a very potent weapon in the hands of people who want to accumulate power for themselves and who really don't much care what happens to society as long as they get to be in charge of it.
You point out a bit of tension between the T's and the L's at either end of the LGBT. And you talk about how the sexual revolution, even within its own ranks, has a tendency to use people, then discard them, in particular some lesbians. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think you and I had this conversation before when I first worked this out and first saw that there are lesbians who are really, really hostile to the whole concept of transgenderism, because in their mind, the man who puts on a dress and wants to become a woman is still a man. He is still a man, and they don't want to call that person a sister. They don't want to welcome that person into the sisterhood. They don't want that person coming to their lesbian film festivals or music festivals or whatever it is. They don't want to be crashed, and they certainly don't want male-bodied trans men, trans women, whatever they're calling themselves these days. They don't want a male-bodied individual coming into a women's room. They see that as the final assault on women's safe spaces. And so they're completely against transgenderism and the whole concept that a man can turn himself into a woman, and now we're all supposed to agree that he's a woman. They're completely against that. And, of course, the people at the Human Rights Campaign and other powerful entities within the LGBT movement, they couldn't care less what those radical feminists think. You know, and back in the day, these are not like moderate feminists. These are the feminists who would be among the more radical feminists. These would be feminists who are, who believe that lesbianism is a central part of their feminist identity, you know, and who might even be separatists. They don't want anything to do with the transgender movement. And so that's what I mean, that those women who are lesbians, they're L's, they should be the very first members of the LGBT movement, they no longer count. And I think that's something that people who are embracing this movement should really look at very closely and take seriously and ask themselves, well,
am I going to be the next one to be thrown under the bus?
Why is it that transgenderism is such a useful, as you say, a useful battering ram for the sexual revolution right now?
Well, I think it's useful because it allows them, what it's trying to do is to destabilize and undermine the concept that the human body comes in a male flavor and a female flavor. Many sexual revolutionaries have resented the human body being male and female for a long time. They've had a problem with that. How are we supposed to be equal? How are we supposed to have equality when we've got this pesky business of differentiated bodies by the sex of the body? But transgenderism is a further step. It's not just saying we have to make men and women absolutely equal in every respect, even though there are obvious differences between men and women. Transgenderism is saying there isn't really any such thing as the sex of the body, that if the fact that I have a vagina and you have a penis and I'm XX and you're XY, those things are really not very important, and we can, and everything that seems like it is important or seems like we can overwrite, or that seems to flow from male and female, we can overwrite all of that with enough cultural conditioning and technological rewiring, you know. And so it's destabilizing the whole concept of male and female. So, and since male and female is a fact, Todd, it's just a simple biological fact that that the human species was created by God in male and female. That's not something we're going to outgrow. That's not something that's going to go away. To make war on that fact is to make war on a very basic human reality. And so they've put themselves at war really with the whole human race in a sense.
If we're not going to have the luxury of sitting here waiting for it to implode and self-destruct, what do those who want to cling to reality and want to resist the war on reality, what do they do?
Well, first of all, I think I want to just praise Dr. Rachel Liu, for her article in this sense. I think it's very important to realize that this movement is intellectually incoherent, you know. And a lot of people want to throw up their hands and say, well, you know, it's so crazy, it can't be real, it's got to go away, it's got to take care of itself. When I was in graduate school, Todd, that's how I thought about feminism. I thought, oh, come on, I don't want to spend my life arguing with this, you know, it's so crazy. But the fact is, it's still around, and it will stay around unless we counter it with better arguments and with better ways of life. And that's where I think the Ruth Institute strategy is really important. We've come up with a strategy that, because the sexual revolution is untrue, we can see that people who live their lives according to it are going to get hurt. So if you try to live like you're some sex other than what you are, you know, if you expect the people around you to be exactly the way you are, if you expect your, I expect my husband to act like me, if I think my children don't really need me because, after all, kids are resilient, you know, these are some of the earlier phases of the sexual revolution, I can hurt a lot of people doing that, and I can be hurt by others doing that to me. And so what needs to happen is that people need to connect the dots between the loneliness and the pain that they're experiencing and this really inhuman ideology that has been foisted upon the whole culture. We need to connect the dots, and we need to tell our stories of how we were hurt by trying to live the sexual revolutionary ideology. And I don't care if you're male or female, young or old, gay or straight, whether you were hurt as a child, whether you hurt yourself as an adult, whether you hurt other people, you know, if you've got a story to tell, people will benefit from hearing your story. And so I think that's the first step in rebuilding some kind of sexual culture that is rational and reasonable, is to remind people that there's a downside to living according to the tenets of the sexual revolution.
Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is our guest. When we come back, we'll turn to the second subject I wanted to talk to her about, feminism and delayed childbearing. Starting with a Huffington Post photo posted by the editor there, Liz Herron. Notice anything about the picture? We'll get an answer to that question right after this.
Even if your child has mild to moderate autism, learning disabilities, attention difficulties, or other learning challenges, he can receive a classical Christian education. The Simply Classical curriculum was created by Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope, an author, educator with a master's degree in special education, and homeschooling mother of twins with special needs. The Simply Classical curriculum has become an answer to prayer for parents and schools. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and save $5 with the coupon code LPR.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Evangelical and Catholic. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th Century. The 4th Century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Monday, June the 6th, we're talking with Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse of the Ruth Institute. Jennifer, there's another subject I wanted to take up with you. It has to do with a picture. I believe this was just posted on social media by Liz Heron, an editor at the Huffington Post, showing an editorial meeting there, a room full of young ladies sitting there. The question, notice anything about this picture of the Huffington Post staff meeting? You wrote about it recently. What did you have to say?
Well, I don't know if all your listeners saw this photograph, but it was a room full of women. And I think Liz Heron was expecting everybody to congratulate her on how progressive they were, that women could advance so far at Huffington Post, you know. But in fact, there was an immediate backlash saying, you know, why is everybody white and why aren't there any guys? You know, like, this is not really very diverse, you know. But my take on it was, look, they're all in their 20s. These are all women in their 20s, probably all childless, probably not married, and they are falling into the trap of believing that they're going to have a happy life as long as they get their career together, and then someday, maybe when they're finally ready, they can get married and have kids. Well, by the time they get around to doing that, it may be too late for them to have kids, and it will be too late for them to backtrack and change their minds. And so my take on it was, you know, we first of all, we shouldn't allow ourselves to be ruled by a bunch of 20-somethings, but beyond that, as adults, we should be saying wherever we possibly can that this is a trap. The idea that the price of success is to delay childbearing, that's a price that's too high to pay. And we should not be asking our young women to pay that kind of price. We should make it possible for them to have stable marriages and have their kids in their 20s, and then later make it possible socially and economically for them to have high-powered careers and things like that. So that was my take on that, Todd.
So just give us some numbers here, because you rehearse some of them in the course of your response to this about really the kind of the raw possibility of a woman past 40 conceiving and bearing a child.
Oh, wow. You know, that was from IVF. Those were IVF figures that I put in there, because I think a lot of young women imagine that, oh, well, if I'm not married, you know, don't have a husband, I can always do IVF with donor sperm, you know, when I'm 40 or 45 or something like that. And the fact is that if you're over 45 and you're using your own unfrozen egg, a fresh egg after 45, you've got a 1% chance of getting pregnant after 45. So it's not, that's not a very realistic plan. That was my point, Todd. It's just not a very realistic plan.
Do you think that, because that picture is emblematic, you know, a room full of girls that all, I call them girls because they're all younger than me, they all look like they're probably late 20s at the oldest, at the absolute oldest. Honestly, Jennifer, they look like they're all in high school.
Yeah, I know.
who have dedicated themselves to, good for them, to a journalistic career here. They've made it to that table of editors at the Huffington Post, which is the 1,000-pound gorilla in the cultural influence room. Do you think they're asking themselves questions like, what happens after this with me, with future husband?
That's the point. I doubt very seriously they're asking themselves those questions, and that's why I put the questions on the table. You know, somebody needs to ask them that question. Somebody, you know, the whole program is predicated on nobody asking too many questions. You know, you get yourself on that track, you get into the good college, you know, you get into an Ivy League school or a seven-sister school, and you graduate with honors, and you get your first job, and then you make it up the pecking order, and, you know, and you've got a nice apartment in Manhattan, and most of your student debt is probably paid off by then, and, oh, wow, now I could get married. Where is everybody? You know, wait, my periods are getting a little irregular here. Wait, what's going on? You know, by the time you get to that point for yourself, you know, and realize that you've been sold a bill of goods, you can be menopausal by the time you figure it out for yourself. And that's not fair. It's just not fair to send these kids down the primrose path like that.
You do ask this question near the end, and I want you to kind of explain yourself. You say, and yes, it is not right for a bunch of white, privileged, childless 20-something women to have such an outsized influence on public opinion, speaking of that editorial room of the Huffington Post. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean by that is that if you view that as part of the opinion-making machine in this culture, which I think is fair, that's not an exaggeration. You know, these are women who have no experience with being a mother. You know, they've been part of a family. They've been on the receiving end of the family. You know, a family is a long-term process of giving and receiving, of loving and being loved, you know. And when we're born, we come into the family on the receiving end of it. And we don't really know what makes it work. We just are able to receive, if we're lucky, of course, you know. And it's only when you're on the giving end that you see how much is really required to keep the whole system running. So our opinion makers are disproportionately coming from among those who have never been on the giving end of it. And it's like we've talked about this before, I think, Todd, you know, that the women on the Supreme Court, two of them are childless women. Why are we allowing childless women to make rules for the whole society? What exactly are we trying to say here? You know, who exactly do we think is going to be benefited by that? You know, so that's what I meant by that part of the story.
Jennifer, before we let you go, tell us about your recent trip to Australia.
Well, I was invited down to Australia by the Marriage Alliance, which is a group of an alliance of pro-marriage, pro-family, pro-life groups down in Australia, because they are anticipating the opportunity to have a referendum or plebiscite on the subject of marriage and whether it should continue to be a man-woman institution or whether it should become a genderless institution. So they brought me down there to go around the country, basically giving one pep rally after another about why they should and how they could and how they could succeed. And it was great. There are a lot of wonderful people in Australia.
Folks, you can find out more about Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse and the Ruth Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand.
She's founder and president of the Ruth Institute. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of several books, including her latest, The Sexual Revolution and Its Victims. Jennifer, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
When we come back, it's time for a conversation with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller. We're going to talk about the devil's attacks on God's order. Stay tuned.
Are you interested in Lutheran education? Join the Consortium for Classical Lutheran Education at a unique conference, July 19 through 21, 2016, on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Speakers include the Reverend Dr. Scott Ashman, Dr. Angus Manouge, Dr. Jean Edward Veith, the Reverend Dr. Thomas Korchak. Visit ccle.org for more information. That's ccle.org.
Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Now, if you appreciate Issues Etc., please consider making a tax-deductible gift today. You can make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
The saints at Gethsemane Evangelical Lutheran Church in downtown Marion, Ohio, invite you to join us as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation, which He won for us in His perfect life, death, and resurrection. Sunday school for all ages begins at 9:15 a.m. with a divine service following at 10:30. Visit our website, gethsemane-lcms.org, or find us on Facebook to learn more about our confessional, historical, and liturgical congregation.
Lutherans talk a lot about doctrine, liturgy, and vocation, but as Martin Luther would say, what does this mean? In a book called Didache, Issues Etc. regular guest Professor John Pless brings together the Bible, the small catechism, and the hymnal to teach the faith. He shows how what we believe is expressed in our daily lives and in our worship. You can find Didache online at emmanuelpress.us.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
For 20 years, we've lifted our voices and instruments to the hymns of Stephen Starkey. Now, CPH has the first ever CD collection of Pastor Starkey's works titled, We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God. This 12-track CD includes nearly an hour of music from the most beloved Lutheran hymn writer of our time. Order now. Use promotion code URA. We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God, is only $15.99. CPH.org.